We had begun last Wednesday night with a message that would be entirely too long to share in one session, so I kind of subdivided it and preached part of it last Wednesday, and we will preach a second part tonight. It's on the subject of surviving criticism, and we all know that we have criticism, don't we? At some point in time, you've either been criticized or you will be at some point in time in your life. So it's important to us to understand about criticism. Now, we want you to turn with us, please, in your scriptures to the book of Acts, chapter 24. I'm going to pick up where we left off last Wednesday in Acts 24. I'm going to pick up at verse 10 and read the remaining portion of that chapter. While you're finding your place, we spoke about the reality of criticism last week, and we're going to deal with the other part, the response to criticism, tonight. So look with us in Acts 24 and verse 10. Then Paul, after that the governor had beckoned unto him to speak, answered, "Forasmuch as I know that thou hast been of many years a judge unto this nation, I do the more cheerfully answer for myself, because that thou mayest understand that there are yet but 12 days since I went up to Jerusalem for to worship, and they neither found me in the temple disputing with any man, neither raising up the people, neither in the synagogues nor in the city, neither can they prove the things whereof they now accuse me. But this I confess unto thee, that after the way which they call heresy, so worship I the God of my fathers, believing all things which are written in the law and in the prophets, and have hope toward God, which they themselves also allow, that there shall be a resurrection of the dead, both of the just and unjust. And herein do I exercise myself to have always a conscience void of offense toward God and toward men. Now after many years I came to bring alms to my nation and offerings, whereupon certain Jews from Asia found me purified in the temple, neither with multitude nor with tumult, who ought to have been here before thee and object if they had aught against me. Or else let these same here say, if they have found any evil doing in me while I stood before the council, except it be for this one voice, that I cried standing among them, touching the resurrection of the dead, I am called in question by you this day. When Felix heard these things, having more perfect knowledge of that way, he deferred them and said, when Lysias, the chief captain, shall come down, I will know the utmost of your matter. And he commanded a centurion to keep Paul and to let him have liberty, and that he should forbid none of his acquaintance to minister or to come to him. And after certain days, when Felix came with his wife Drusilla, which was a Jewess, he sent for Paul and heard him concerning the faith in Christ. And as he reasoned of righteousness and temperance and judgment to come, Felix trembled and answered, go thy way for this time. When I have a convenient season, I will call for thee. He hoped also that money should have been given him of Paul, that he might loose him. Wherefore he sent for him the oftener, and communed with him. But after 2 years, Porcius Festus came into Felix's room, and Felix, willing to show the Jews a pleasure, left Paul bound. Surviving criticism. Let me just kind of give us an update, because there were four things we dealt with last time. We're going to deal with seven things tonight. They're so vitally important to every one of us. I'm going to just quickly mention the ones we looked at last week. Hope you'll make a note of them. Hope you'll just, you know, keep them handy and then take notes on what we're going to share tonight. We said last week in the reality of criticism, first of all, criticism often comes when we least expect it. Secondly, we said criticism often comes when we least deserve it. And then we said last week that criticism often comes by the ones least qualified to do the criticizing. And then we said last week that criticism often comes in the least helpful manner to help us out. So those were the realities of what criticism may be. Now, it's all the more important as to how you respond to the criticism that comes in your life. We all know from studying, even a casual study of the life of the Apostle Paul, you know, Paul was relentlessly persecuted, criticized, beaten, stoned, shipwrecked, all kinds of things happened to him. He was relentlessly criticized all his life until his death when he gave Jesus Christ his life. Now, if we could see how Paul responded to the countless criticizing that came into his life, surely it ought to help us know how to respond when we're criticized today, shouldn't it? Surely it should. There are seven things here I want to show you this evening, how that Paul responded to the criticism that came his way. Now, these things aren't complicated. They're not difficult to understand. But I promise you this, they're useful to us in our days as well. Now, I want you to see them now as Paul shares his response as he's asking in verse 10 for an opportunity to speak. He's now awaiting in Caesarea his trip to go to Rome, and he asks Felix if he could respond to the criticism leveled against him, the charges, if you will. Now, the first thing we need to note is this. When you respond to criticism, like Paul, don't get caught up in the emotion or the emotions of the charges laid against you. Look at verse 10. He said in verse 10, "Then Paul, after the governor had beckoned unto him to speak, answered, For as much as I know that thou hast been of many years a judge unto this nation," notice this next phrase, "I do the more cheerfully answer for myself." Don't get caught up in the emotions of the criticizing that may be leveled against you. Isn't that where most of us fail to start with? When somebody criticizes us, usually we get mad, don't we? We do. We get caught up immediately in the emotions of what's been laid against us. Paul says, I want to cheerfully respond to those charges. What do you mean, Paul, cheerfully? Paul should have been mad as a hornet. All those things, all those lies told about him? Well, we would probably, wouldn't we? Get real upset, and our emotions would just fly every direction. Not Paul. He wouldn't be caught up in this. Paul wanted to give a factual response to the criticism leveled against him. Paul was never going to let his emotions take the lead. Now listen to me. If you're criticized and you let your emotions get all tangled up, and you let your emotions take the lead, here's what's going to happen. Your anger's going to be vented, and you're going to make some very irrational responses and some words that probably later you wish you could take back, but they're going to be gone. So don't let your emotions ever take the lead. When you're being criticized and you need to respond, don't let your emotions take the lead. If you do, they're deadly. They really are. Well, Paul wouldn't go there. And we ought not go there either. So the first thing we need to remember in response to criticism is don't let your emotions get caught up in the criticizing against you. Look at the second thing with Paul. Paul stayed with the facts, and we need to do the same thing. Look in verses 11 through verse 13 there, chapter 24. He says, "Because that thou mayest understand," get the facts, he's saying, "that there are yet but 12 days since I went up to Jerusalem for to worship. And they neither found me in the temple disputing with any man, neither raising up the people, neither in the synagogues nor in the city. Neither can they prove the things whereof they now accuse me." Paul just stayed with the facts. Paul says, "Felix, check out my record. Just go back and investigate. It's just been 12 days since I've come to Jerusalem. But he said, I came to worship. Ask those who were there in the temple. Ask those who were in the synagogues. Ask those that I talked to in the streets. Just go back and check my record out and you'll find out. I didn't cause any problem anywhere with anybody in the temple or in the synagogues or in the city. No man found me in a discussion with somebody else or a group of people trying to get a riot started in the city of Jerusalem. He says, and on the other hand, the facts are this. They can't even prove what they've leveled and criticized me against. Paul never blinked. He always stayed with the facts. Well, how's that work for us? If you'll stick to the facts, it'll keep you on target in a criticizing situation when you're being criticized. It'll also, if you'll stick to the facts, it'll help enhance your credibility with others around you. That's exactly what Paul did. That's exactly what we need to do. Second thing, stay with the facts. First thing, don't let your emotions run away and get caught up in the charges against you. Look at the third thing Paul said. He always told the truth with a clear conscience. Look at verses 14 through 16 there. But this I confess unto thee, that after the way which they call heresy, so worship I the God of my fathers, believing all things which are written in the law and in the prophets, and have hope toward God, which they themselves also allow, that there shall be a resurrection of the dead, both of the just and of the unjust. And herein do I exercise myself to have always a conscience void of offense toward God and toward man. Paul was careful in explaining to the council and explaining to Felix here that he was just telling them how he really had served God. He said, I believe everything the Jews believe as far as the law is concerned, and the prophets as well, and they themselves believe in a resurrection. I also believe in a resurrection. Well, as he spoke these words, those who are there listening kind of got a little plugged in, you see, because he was saying some of the things that they believe. That caused them, see, not to be alienated from Paul. So trust in what Paul was saying began to grow just a little bit, didn't it? So, when you're being criticized, you have to respond, always tell the truth with a clear conscience. Avoid falsehoods at every turn. If you step out on a lie or you ignore some misdeed, you're going to really weaken your case tremendously. So stick with the truth. Why do you stick with the truth? Because the truth is what will set you free. Nothing but the truth will set you free. So Paul just stayed with the facts. He told the truth with a clear conscience. For Paul, there was no backdoor exits. Not for Paul. No, no, no. Now his accusers begin to squirm just a little bit. He's tightening up his case just a little bit in his defense. So look at the fourth thing. He identified the original source of the criticizers. Look at verse 17. Now after many years I came to bring alms to my nation and offerings, whereupon certain Jews from Asia found me purified in the temple, neither with multitude nor with tumult, who ought to have been here before thee and object if they had aught against me. Paul struck a nerve right here, folks. I'm telling you, he did. He exposed the original ones who criticized him. My accusers, he says, were Jews from Asia. Where are they? They are not here. What they had done was organize some second and third-handed information through a crooked lawyer named Tertullus, who they hired to accuse Paul before Felix. And the only ones there to accuse him were playing actors as they had been eyewitnesses. Not a one of them had been there. He said, if those Jews in Asia who accuse me ought to be here, if they've got some charges against me. So it's always important to reveal the true origination of the person or persons or whatever who's criticizing you. But I find this to be true in my life. I don't know about you. More times than not, if you're criticized, it's usually not going to be by the original person. It's going to be by some second-hand or some third-hand information. Somebody's fed somebody else to do their dirty work for them. But Paul just exposed who it was. Let them show up, he said, if they got something to say against me. Let them come and give the case before you. My original accusers are not these here today. My original accusers are the Jews from Asia, who we said last week, if you remember, they just dogged Paul's heels everywhere he went. Their whole goal of life was to make life as miserable as they could for the Apostle Paul. You ever been there? You get a witness on that one. All right, a fifth thing. In responding now to criticism, it's important for us not to surrender and not to quit. Thank you, Paul. Look at verse 20 and verse 25. He says, or else let these same here say if they have found any evil against me or doing in me while I stood before the council. And in verse 25, he turns on Felix. And as he reasoned of righteousness, temperance, and judgment to come, Felix trembled and answered, go thy way for this time. When I have a convenient season, I will call for thee. Good for Paul. He didn't quit. Good for Paul. He didn't surrender. He said, you let them tell me where I'm wrong if you can. Let them come by and let them stand here and say it for everybody here to hear. Let me hear their accusations. And you know what happened? Their accusations fell dead in the water. Right at Paul's feet, so to speak. Paul never quit. Notice this. Paul stayed calm. Paul stayed courageous. And Paul got up and Paul stood up and Paul kept on going. You know how he did? Now listen, because this is going to keep you going too. Paul depended on the Lord to take him where Paul knew he couldn't go. So we need to do the same thing, don't we? Depend on the Lord to take us, to carry us where we can't go. It was so strong a witness that the Bible says Felix began to sweat. He began to tremble. He's about to get in trouble himself. So what did he do? He took the easy way out for a politician. He just adjourned the court, sent them all home. Governors, he was a governor. I'll just say politicians. Politicians don't like to lose face. They won't be popular with everybody, won't everybody to like them. Felix was no different. So he knew this was going south pretty quickly. So he just dismissed it, called a recess. And he gets back and talks to his wife about it. In this case, that was a good thing. May not be always good to talk to your wife about some things, but nonetheless, this was a good thing. His wife was a Jewish. She knew the Jewish faith. She was a Jew. She was a Jew. And so she sat down with him, and she explained to him the Jewish religion. And he had a pretty good working knowledge of what the Jews believed. Well, they listened and talked more about Paul's situation. Paul's convictions really got to Felix. I'm telling you, it really did. Listen to his words there in 25 again. Just listen at it. And as he, Paul, reasoned of righteousness, temperance, and judgment to come, Felix trembled and answered, go thy way for this time. When I have a convenient season, I will call for you. Now, he did speak with Paul on some other occasions beyond this. And we do not know what the content of those other conversations might have been. But we do know this. His intent was Paul might do a little on-the-table payoff, pay him a little money. If you'd give me a good bribe, Paul, I'd see that you'd be turned loose. But Paul, again, he's left in prison and comes a new ruler on, Festus. Now, here Paul, for 2 years, has been put back in prison. Felix put him in prison, a cold, dark, damp prison, for 2 years, ignoring Paul. Left him alone. 2 years passes, and now he leaves office. And Festus comes to be the governor. But I want you to see now the sixth thing Paul did in response to his criticism. He never became impatient, and he never became bitter. Oh, how could we learn from Paul? Never become impatient, never get bitter. Look at verse 6 and look at verse 8 there in chapter 25. And when he had tarried among them more than 10 days, he went down to Caesarea, and the next day, sitting on the judgment seat, commanded Paul to be brought. This is Festus now, going down to Jerusalem. And when he was come, the Jews which came down from Jerusalem stood round about and laid many and grievous complaints against Paul, which they could not prove. While he answered for himself, neither against the law of the Jews, neither against the temple, nor yet against Caesar, have I offended anything at all. 2 years Paul had been left in prison for that long time. He had talked to Felix. He had told Felix the truth. He had reasoned with him, witnessed to him, and no response for 2 years. No change in Felix's attitude toward him for 2 years. No help for the Apostle Paul for 2 years. Now another cold winter was coming on. And after 2 years, Felix leaves office, and Festus comes on the scene. 2 years Paul had been ignored. Now the new governor, Festus, takes over. On his first trip to Jerusalem, what did he find? Here Festus finds Jews laying charges, criticizing the Apostle Paul. The same leaders who had hated him with Felix still hate him, still want to dog his path, and here was their plan. They wanted Festus to bring Paul from Caesarea back over to Jerusalem where they could criticize and judge him there. What their real plan was, they were going to ambush him, they were going to kill Paul. That's exactly what they were going to do. So, would you bring him back over to Jerusalem so we could judge him there? But Festus was just a little bit smarter than that. He didn't agree. He said, I'll have a hearing at Caesarea in a few days, and I'll bring Paul there, and if you want to re-criticize him, you come there and we'll reopen his case. Well, he even gave Paul an offer. Paul, if you want to go back to Jerusalem to have your case tried there, I'll let you go back to Jerusalem. No, Paul didn't want to go back to Jerusalem. He knew what was in store for him if he'd ever go back to Jerusalem. He knew it. Look at chapter 25 there, verse 6. So when he had tarried among them more than 10 days, he went down to Caesarea, and the next day, sitting on the judgment seat, commanded Paul to be brought forth. So he calls Paul out. Here comes the group, same ones. No change, no help, still hate Paul, still criticize him, still want him dead. Paul speaks. And look what he says in verse 8 there, chapter 25. While he answered for himself, neither against the law of the Jews, neither against the temple, nor yet against Caesar, have I offended anything at all. So Paul answers for himself. He says, I'm not guilty of the charges and the criticism they've laid against me. But look at something in Paul's life. Here Paul's not impatient. He'd waited 2 years in a cold, dark prison. Nobody to help him. Case not improved whatsoever. Paul's not bitter. Paul's just standing up and telling the truth. He said, I am not guilty. Notice what he didn't do. Now, what some of us might do, if we had Paul's situation, we'd brag probably, well, I'm an apostle of Jesus Christ. You can't do this to me. He didn't defend his apostleship. Paul didn't say, well, I'm an educated man. I've been to all these seminars, and I've been to universities, and I'm an educated guy. You can't treat me this way. He didn't defend his academic scholarship or his apostleship, did he? No bitterness, no impatience whatsoever. He simply said, I have made no offense toward the Jews, toward the temple, toward the Romans, toward the citizens, toward anybody. He said, I've just not made offense. He said, in fact, I've been real careful in my life to be void of offense toward God both and toward man. Well, Paul knew if they sent him back to Jerusalem, it would be the end of his road. He knew it. He knew it. Look at verse 10 and 11 there in chapter 25. Then said Paul, I stand at Caesar's judgment, or Caesar's judgment seat, where I ought to be judged. To the Jews have I done no wrong, as thou very well knowest. For if I be an offender, or have committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. But if there be none of these things which whereof they accuse me, no man may deliver me unto them. I appeal unto Caesar. Paul remembered what God had told him back in chapter 23, verse 11. Go back there and look what God had promised him. In chapter 23, verse 11, God had spoken to Paul, and here's what he had said. Chapter 23, verse 11, and the night following, the Lord stood by him and said, be of good cheer, Paul, for as thou hast testified of me in Jerusalem, so must thou bear witness also at Rome. Paul just rested in the promise God had made. Paul knew he wasn't going to Jerusalem. Paul knew he wasn't going to stay in Caesarea. Paul knew he was going to Rome. God had already told him, Paul, you're going to testify of me both in Rome, just like you have in Jerusalem. Now, the last thing I want you to see in responding to criticism, Paul stood on the promise of God. You can always stand on the promise of God if you're the only one you can stand. He said, I'm a Roman citizen and I appeal to Caesar. Any Roman citizen had the right to stand before Caesar, and nobody could deny that right. So here Festus now is caught between a rock and a hard place. When he said, I appeal to Caesar, and Paul being a Roman citizen as well, he said, well, this is case closed. To Caesar you'll go. So you'll go to Caesar. Isn't it strange how no Roman governor, no politician, no president, no king, no ruler, no dictator can outwit God? Paul just, I could imagine him almost smiling. Well, to Caesar you're going to have to go because that's what you wanted and you're a Roman citizen, so you can go. So now Paul's going to find his way to the capital of the whole world at that time. He was going to Rome. So let me just quickly run through these seven things. Maybe you didn't get them as I went through. Let me just mention them again so you can write them down if you didn't get them, or see me later and I'll be glad to share them with you. When you responded to criticism, number one, refuse to get caught up in the emotions of the charges. Second thing, stay with the facts. Third thing, always tell the truth in a clear conscience. The fourth thing, identify those who are criticizing you, the original ones who laid the criticism against you. Number five, don't surrender and don't quit. Number six, never become impatient or bitter. And number seven, stand on the promise of God. Listen to me, beloved. Eventually, every single one of us, at some point in time, we're going to have to face our critics, aren't we? We are. We certainly are. Those who are only seeking our downfall. You might be facing some of that right now. I don't know your situation there. Someone might be trying their best to prove things against you. It might be lies outright, just to hurt you and to bring you down. Well, learn from Paul. Learn from the Apostle Paul. I'm trying to learn from him. There's some good stuff Paul teaches us. Here it is. Remain calm. Remain calm. Rest your case in the Lord. Take your battles to the Lord in prayer. Lay your case out before the Lord. Don't quit or don't stop. Listen. If what's being said about you is untrue, call on God to give you the strength to stand on the truth. Amen? Why is that, preacher? I'll tell you why. Grace hath brought you safe thus far, and grace will take you home. Amen? It will. Always will.